Hey everyone, I just wanted to drop in real quick before today's episode. There was a little bit of an audio issue on my microphone during this recording, just an unfortunate side effect of some voice meter banana settings not quite working out how I expected. Yet another side effect of these remote recordings. But hey, it isn't too bad of an issue. I just wanted to notice I am aware of the clipping, and I am hoping that for next month we will not have this issue anymore. But just wanted to apologize in advance. It's not super distracting, but you will notice it from time to time. But anyway, enjoy today's episode, and we're very happy to be back. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Backlog Review Game Club. I don't know why I added the extra pause there. I wasn't trying to be dramatic.
But it was dramatic. Yeah. And that's really what we need after such a hiatus.
That's right. The pandemic may have gone after a lot of things. My productivity, my self-esteem, all of that. But it was not going to take the podcast with it.
No. It may have ravaged our timeline, but yeah. It will live on.
2020.
We will persevere.
Yeah, I remember like thinking about it now, like obviously hindsight being 2020 and all, but like I remember the optimism at the beginning of 2020 being like, oh, that'll be the year we finally get the podcast going. And then like looking back, it's like, how did I do anything past May?
Yeah. Way to begin an entire decade.
Yeah, right? What a perfect way to start a new decade.
I mean, speaking of the cliche or the idiom, hindsight really is 2020. I feel like hindsight is 2020 has been given a new like extra level of meaning.
Oh,
because
oh god, I just connected those dots in my brain.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
I mean, it's great to be back. You know, we're luckily it feels like we're on the end of we might be able to start doing we'll be able to start doing some in-person recordings again.
Yeah.
Luckily, thanks to our vaccine schedules syncing up in a fun way.
Yeah, interestingly, it just sort of happened that way.
Yeah, at the time of the recording, Paul and I are getting ready for dose number two tomorrow.
Yep.
So, very excited, but also anticipating being down for the count for a day, maybe.
Took Tuesday off just to go.
I haven't officially
chill out
taken,
if nothing else.
I haven't officially taken Tuesday off, but I'm probably taking Tuesday off.
Yeah. Yeah, might as well.
Literally everybody I've talked to is like, you're not gonna be here Tuesday.
Yeah.
No, like, cool.
Nobody needs a hero in this regard.
Yeah. But so if you're out there, and if you're not vaccinated, please for the love of God go get the vaccine. if you can, please. But all right, that'll be less of our pandemic talk for today.
It's been pervading everything.
Right. I will say though, it has given me it, you know, obviously with the time off we took to try to just get through life and figure out things, I was able to get, you know, it was pretty good for my backlog overall. Although there were definitely times, and there are still times, where I find myself not wanting to play video games because it's just like, well, I've done it a lot over the last year. And there's just some days where I'm like, I need a break. But,
yep.
I mean, I finally polished off Nier Automata. Don't worry, I want to talk about it, but I don't think there's ever a chance in hell that you're going to want to play it.
Oh, no. Well, I apologize for that, I guess.
It's all right. I have an idea for games like that. Like, I think we can do special episodes about that in the future.
Okay.
Also, what's the other one? That one that we finally beat. My wife and I beat River City Girls literally last night, which was a lot of fun. Oh, I was gonna pick up God of War again because I managed to get a PS5 and all of this. And so I was gonna play it again because it runs really well. And then I picked it up and I was like, oh right, but then there's like a bunch of stuff I still haven't done yet. I'm not particularly motivated to do it. So I don't know, that might happen. But you got your Series X too as well.
I did. I got a Series X. It's funny because my Xbox One has since moved into my bedroom,
mm-hmm.
where like my old TV has now, you know, made its place,
right,
in its new home. So I spend a lot more time in my room polishing off some old games that don't necessarily or aren't necessarily going to benefit from the Series X. So finished. Right. Speaking of, you know, what we're about to be talking about, mm-hmm. finished Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker.
Right, which...
recently.
I feel like, I don't know if that one will get its own episode or if we work it into another one, because it's not a... I don't know, we'll talk about that another time, but...
Yeah, that would be okay. It's...
Yeah.
It's sort of its own thing.
Yeah, it was a PSP game.
Yep. And it translated pretty well to the Xbox, to a console. Or a large console, home console, not handheld. The non-handheld.
Yeah. Two sticks instead of the one.
Yeah. I did hold something in my hand, I guess. But anyway, my controller, okay. Anyway, I feel like that was the big one. There were probably several other smaller games that I beat that I can't think of right now, but
right,
it certainly was a good time for my backlog as well.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because I feel like the Series X, I will give the Series X, you know, ton of credit. It's like so good for backlog stuff, you know, because yeah. you can go all the way back to original Xbox with that. Truth. Meanwhile, I have PlayStation Now, which helps a little bit, but like if it's not on PS4 or PS5, I'm gonna have to stream it from PlayStation Now, and I did that with today's game for a little bit, and it's not bad, but it's not the best way to play it. What say we get into talking about this game?
I think it's time.
Yep. This month, and it's one I've been looking forward to talking about for a while for a lot of reasons. It's Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater.
Do you copy? You're already in enemy territory, and somebody might be listening in. From here on out, we'll be using code names to refer to each other. Your code name for this mission will be Naked Snake. I'll be referring to you as Snake from now on. You're not to mention your real name.
Snake?
What, you don't like snakes?
What do you mean?
Well, you've eaten one before, haven't you?
In survival training.
I'm glad to hear that.
I don't know if I'd ever order one in a restaurant, but...
Be careful. You might not have a choice.
What about you, Major? What should I call you?
Let's see. I'll be Tom. Call me Major Tom.
In terms of, like, a complete Metal Gear game, I think 3 is probably up there, if not it's hard for me to think, but honestly 3 is the one that I think of when I think of Metal Gear. 2 is the one I think of when I think of Metal Gear Story.
Yeah.
Well, and that's 5 that's... is what I think of when I think of gameplay. But then 3 is like that right mix of everything.
Yeah. Yep.
But
I'm with you. At least, I mean, I haven't played 5, but of the ones that I've played so far, and, you know, feeling more modern controls on Peace Walker,
mm-hmm.
Allowed me to sort of, you know, not maybe appreciate is the wrong word, but just understand that, yes, like, this was a very good culmination of all of those things. It wasn't without its flaws, but that doesn't, mm-hmm. that's not. I don't think that they were bad ones.
Yeah, well, we'll get into it. And I want to say out of the gate, this is not going to be a 3-hour story recap like we did with Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, it's intense. It was intense, and I think there is a time and a place for stuff like that, but we're going to talk about it. We're going to hit more bullet points than we did for two. Yeah. So Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. I'm going to say it full title as much as I can because I love saying it.
Snake Eater. And I'm gonna sing Snake Eater.
You're going to sing almost the song.
Yeah. It's been long enough that I don't really remember the melody.
I want to sing it, but I know we can't because of copyright.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it was great. I'll
sing a little bit, probably. Anyway. The original release of Metal Gear Solid 3 came out November 17th, 2004 on the PlayStation 2. This was the second Metal Gear game on the console. And I found a couple of interviews, one from GamePro, one from IGN. Not like in-depth one, they were articles from whenever the game was coming out. I did find out from those interviews that this was supposed to be a PlayStation 3 game. But the release window for the console was so far out that they were just like, yeah, we're just going to put it on the 2. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So they released it for the 2. Now, there are 3 versions of this game. Really, there's 2, but there's 3 releases of it. So there's the original Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. That was November 17th. There's then the subsistence version, which, much like the first two Metal Gear games, they put it out like a year or two later with new features and stuff. That subsistence, that is the one that I owned and played originally, whenever it was probably, it was close to 2005 when I got it, because I remember reading about it and thinking I'm getting subsistence.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 2005 for that release. And then Konami released the HD edition of 2, 3, and Peace Walker. That was released on November 8th, 2011 for the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, and the PlayStation Vita. But on the Vita one, you had to buy them all individually, which was really stupid.
That is very lame.
Yeah, but they always did that with the Vita stuff. Anyway, the HD versions are based on the European editions of, like, they're based on Subsistence and then whatever was it. I can never remember what the expanded version of 2 was. It's also an S, but it's not Subsistence. I thought I had it behind me. I don't have it behind me. But
Sons of Liberty was the...
Well, that was the subtitle.
That was the name of 2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But then it was like Sons of Liberty. It was like Metal Gear Solid 2. I want to say Sistence, and then this was Subsistence, but I know that's not what it is. Oh, well. But anyway, so they're the expanded versions. They come with like extra difficulty levels. You know, we can talk a little bit about it, but... three. If you want to play it nowadays, I mean, that HD remake is flawless. It was done by Blue Point Games. Blue Point does a ton of HD remasters, and they're all damn near perfect. That is like the best way to play it right now if you don't have a PlayStation 2.
That was the way that I played it.
This, of course, is another Hideo Kojima joint with the original iteration of Konami Kojima Productions. Developing the game and Konami releasing it. Kojima stated in another interview that he wanted to make this game drastically different from 2 in terms of setting, in terms of some of the gameplay, mostly because this was that because they were going to re-release, they're going to make another Metal Gear for the PlayStation 2, so they wanted it to be drastically different. And I mean, he nailed that.
Yeah. Could have been more different.
Yep. Really. My favorite quote is that he did say he wanted the story to be much simpler than 2. And if you wanted to go back and hear 3 hours of talk or 2.5 hours of talk on that Metal Gear story, you can find out just how complicated it was.
Yep.
And it's still a Kojima story, so there's still an insane amount of detail, but it's way, way less than 2. They don't feel like there's not three nicknames for every group.
Yeah.
You know, but the game is set during the Cold War. It's
to add color to that, I guess, like, it is streamlined and condensed in to its benefit.
Oh, absolutely.
That's definitely what you were getting at, but just, you know, the detail is there, but it is not just insanely difficult to keep track of and all of that.
Yeah. This is Kojima Productions firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Across the board agree with this one. So this game is set during the Cold War, and it's set post Cuban Missile Crisis, if I remember correctly. I just read that in the game manual today. So it's like right after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And we get to meet Naked Snake, who, you know, this was no big surprise. It's Big Boss. So we get to see, you know, Metal Gear Solid 3 is the story of Boss becoming, or Naked Snake becoming Big Boss. And so you are following him from it's like the onset of his first real mission. He had been training under his mentor, the Boss, for 10 years, if I remember correctly. And this was his first mission, the Virtuous Mission. Virtuous Operation is the first thing you do in the game. Mm-hmm. And that is, you have to go get a Russian scientist who defected from the Soviet Union. I should say Soviet scientist, because it's still the Soviet Union. Soviet scientist Sokolov, he is defecting from the Soviet Union because he had been developing this tank with nuclear capabilities called the Shagohod. And so he knew that this thing was going to be like a horrible thing if it got into the wrong hands. He didn't want to continue work on it, so that's why he defected. That was in 1961 is when he started on it. 1962, the CIA creates FOX, which is Force Operation X. I can't believe that.
How original.
I know. So those of you who listen to the podcast probably don't know, but we streamed on my Twitch channel, we streamed the original Metal Gear Solid for about 2 months because I had never played through it and Paul had never seen it as well. And so there was a moment where we found out where Otacon's name from, what Otacon's name means. And I'm not going to spoil it here because we have to talk about Metal Gear Solid original. But I had a moment similar to that moment with Fox when I found out what it meant. And I was like, really? That was it? Like Force Operation? Because it gets built up. Like, I came into the series at 2 and everything had all these like, you know, Fox, Foxhound.
Not years of age. 2.
Yeah, 2 in the game. But like, it felt like there was this mythology there, and I had this thing built up in my head, like, Fox must mean something important. And it was like Force Operation X. I was like, what? Oh, it was such a letdown.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, Fox exists for super secret missions. That's their whole jam. And so the game starts in 1964, and you have to go rescue Sokolov and bring him back. Now, we should probably take this time to talk about Boss. The Boss. Not Big Boss. The Boss, the character, who is Snake's mentor. And also, unrequited love interest.
Yeah.
They don't... So, I know clearly he's that Snake... Naked Snake, Jack is his name.
Yeah.
You know, once again, blurring the lines of all the characters in the series, because Raiden is also Jack. He loves Boss. Boss was his mentor. Boss taught him everything that he knows, and maybe some things that he that she kept some things clearly that he doesn't know in terms of combat. But out of the gate, Boss is already the best female character in the series.
For sure.
100%. It's the one character Kojima doesn't really fuck up. More or less.
I completely agree with that.
There's no weird leering at Boss the way you'll get some other characters we're going to meet later on. The boss is great. The boss for the English release is voiced. This is the weirdest part to me. She is voiced by Lori Allen, who, and this is how I knew her, and which is why it was really weird to hear that voice. So if you don't know her, she has done a lot of voiceover for animation and cartoons. And primarily in the US, she is known for being the voice of Diane, who is the news anchor on Family Guy.
Completely different characters.
Yeah. And yet the voices are almost identical. Like, the inflection is, like, slightly different, but other than that, like, you can totally, like, if you've watched, and this is, like, old years ago having watched it, it's like, it was right around that time where Family Guy first came out, and I remember hearing the voice, and then I played Metal Gear, and I'm like, wait, isn't that the same person? And it was. And so every time I hear it, I can never shake it because it's just so jarring. But, like, she does a fantastic job. Like, mm-hmm. I think she probably she's one of the better voice performances, I think, in the series.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's another thing that they nailed in this game. But, sorry, I didn't know if you were going to...
No, I completely agree. Yeah, sorry, there was some errant things happening in my microphone. Or in my speakers. So I agree. And maybe when I said completely different characters, I guess I just mean more like a deadpan news anchor versus the greatest the greatest secret agent in the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She is dealing with two completely different characters, but just like the voice isn't different enough.
Yeah, the voice really isn't different.
Yeah, for me, correct. it was so weird to hear the first time. But now I tend to think of her more as Boss than I do anything else. So anyway, go ahead before we get back into story.
I agree. I think the voice acting, and it just the. That in line with like the pacing of the story and all of that, I think was just really good. I feel like there were fewer, and maybe I'm glossing it over because it's been a few months since I played it, mm-hmm. but I feel like there were less like I don't even know how you describe them, but you know, they happen a lot in 1 and 2 where it's like where Snake adds in like the little aside to like explain whatever the thing is that they're talking about. Yeah. I just feel like that's it was much that it happened a lot less there. And I don't know if it's just, if maybe it just felt like it blended a little better cause they like acted those parts in better. But, I just think that those kinds of, asides were less prevalent, which is a testament to them.
Yeah, no, honestly, it felt like there was just someone actually edited the script.
Right, yeah, it felt like a conversation rather than it was like, oh, I'm going to add some voice inflection to give you the explanatory notes.
There was no Ken Love Bloom on a battlefield here.
No, correct.
It's another teaser for our eventual talk on Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, man, yeah.
So let me... I think it might actually be better if I run down some of these notes I have on the gameplay here now before we do the story, because we're still going to bullet point story, and I think we'll probably talk about specific things along the way in the story.
Yeah.
But in terms of like what the game you're playing is, it is like Metal Gear Solid 2. The original release of this game had the same camera that 2 did. It was that top down kind of view where it was like he had it, you know, it was fixed to a specific spot up above the action, and you could only look at it in one direction. However, the subsistence version added the 3D camera, and pretty much the series never looked back at that point. That is really the best. That's the other reason you want to play at least either subsistence or the HD re-release, because that 3D camera is a game changer.
Yeah, for sure.
It's there's no other way to play, because I did actually boot up the copy of Snake Eater that I have on PS2 that does not have
Snake
that camera.
it's
just a little wrong, and that's why
it's gonna be wrong. It's gonna be wrong and different every time. Don't worry.
But anyway, yeah, I booted that up just to try it with the original camera, and it is really odd, like, having only played the 3D camera version. I mean, it's not, like, completely out of the ordinary, because I played 2, but it does feel like a different game in a way. That's why you want to play that version. Better camera. It is the same, like, sort of system with the gun. The gameplay more or less plays the same. However, they added a bunch of stuff and then also removed a few key things. So one of the things you don't have in this game is a full-fledged radar. You have an active sonar that you get at one point, and then you also have a AP sensor. And in one of the interviews that I had, or that I had read about this with Kojima, he did say that that was done on purpose because he was worried that the game was becoming too much of a radar game. Like, just look at the radar in the corner, and then you can just figure it out. And once again, not to spoil the MGS1 chat, but that is how you play that game. really need to look at what's going on the screen. You just look at the radar and that's it. So that forced people, like, it forced players to actually have to look and learn the environment again. And that was really interesting. You know, I didn't go back and beat it. I have beaten this game 2 times in the, you know, prior, but I did for this, you know, recording, I didn't get a chance to go back and play through it all the way again. But I have enough memory of the game to know, like, that really made me focus on learning enemy patterns, like being careful when I looked around corners, as opposed to, all right, is the little dot there? Where's the cone at?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know, like, because you've played 2, you played 3. Did you notice a difference in not having that radar there?
Yeah, it definitely was different. And I think, too, you know, the absence of the radar is fine in this regard. Well, you know, you don't get to rely on it. Yes, like that's been, you know, talked about, I guess. But in the, you know, subsistence and later versions, because of that 3D camera, you are then able to look around the corners. You're able to do a little bit more in terms of that. Whereas, you know, if it's just top down, like that radar is kind of required in that, yeah, in that viewpoint. But, it was, I think it was a good change of pace, and worked well for, you know, the new technology and viewpoints and stuff.
Yeah. So those were the only 2 things. That was the main thing that was changed / removed. Then they added a ton of new systems for this game. So one of the systems is there's a camo, there's camouflage, which you can change your face paint, you can change your outfits. Of course, this being a Kojima game, there's a lot of really silly ones you can find in the environment or earn after you play the game. But that added a layer because you now have a percentage of camouflage that you can have at any one time, and it will help you hide better in the environment, which is good because the enemies are smarter in this. There's an injury system, which this is like one of those ones that is polarizing, I think, to people. Some people love it. Some people don't love it because you have to like constantly go into the menu, especially if you get if the shit goes down. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to go, you know, have to go into the menu and like pull out the bullet and suture the wound and put band-aids on it. I like that system. I think it's a fun little addition.
Yeah, I agree, and that's what's interesting about it too is that not only are you forced to go beyond just the ration point, you have several other types of medical equipment that you have to find in the area, and those help, with each of the different types of wounds that you get or, whatever procedures you have to complete. So I thought that was an interesting mechanic for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And on top of that system, there's also there's a medicine as a part of that too, because you can't get poisoned because guess what? There's snakes, a lot of them. And you need that for the stamina system because you need to find food, or you can capture food, and then you can, having more stamina, if I remember correctly, not only is that the bar that you need when you hang off of things, but I think it also helps you heal faster. Because I do remember, obviously, title of the game, one of the direct meanings is you will capture and eat snakes, and you do it very quickly.
Yep.
And one of my favorite things about that system is that Snake has real opinions on what animals he captures and how they taste.
Yep.
And it's a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yep. There's varying levels of how tasty he finds things, and half of the fun of that system is to go and just make him eat everything and just listen to his awful or tasty, there's so many good ones. One of the systems they expanded on was CQC.
I want some more. Sorry.
It's okay. The CQC system returns, but in a more expanded form, I guess. Like, it feels like they spent more time other than, hey, mash that button a whole lot.
Yeah.
It still is mash that button a whole lot, but then it's like, hey, you can mash two buttons if you're real good.
Yeah. And they also do a very bad job of telling you about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember I was probably, I don't know, 5 hours into the game before I realized that I could do that. And I think I even remember telling you.
You did tell me that.
I was like, oh, shit, I could have used CQC this entire time.
I remember.
This makes this game a lot more attainable.
I remember that text message, because I remember you just like, oh, my God, I'm 5 hours in, and I just figured out CQC.
It was one of those. Why does this keep popping up? I need to figure out what it is. And so I just looked at controls online, and that was it.
Yep.
Figured it out.
All right. So that's kind of the gameplay here. You have your missions, you go do it. It's still stealth. And then occasionally you have a half an hour story.
Yep.
it's Metal Gear. Come on.
Classic. Yeah.
That all said, let's get back into the story beats, and then we can pick off. I'm going to rely too on your memory because you played this more. So there's going to be some things I want to ask you about if you have any specific memories of.
Okay.
Because I have this more bullet point stuff. So the Sokolov mission that starts the game, you find out that that Jack's mentor, the boss, has defected to Russia. And as a result, you are introduced to part of the Cobra unit. I don't know if you meet all of the Cobra unit. You just meet Colonel Volgin, who is a part of the Soviets. And they recapture Sokolov. And the boss does a real good job here of beating the absolute piss out of Jack. Breaks his arm, basically, and then I remember tosses him into a river, and it basically just doesn't kill him, but gets real close. And so, Snake is betrayed, doesn't know what to do. And then before the scene ends, Colonel Volgin you find out that the boss has stolen a nuke from the U.S. And Volgan...
A portable nuke.
Right, you know, one of those ones that you can just, like, carry in a suitcase.
Yeah, just a handheld one. You can shoot from the hip.
Yep.
Just a nuke. Just...
Yep. So, has that. He decides he needs to play with his fancy new toy right there on the helicopter as you're leaving the scene. And so, he fires the nuke back at the Russian site that you were just at in an attempt to frame the U.S. for nuking Soviets, hopefully thereby inducing actual nuclear war, which does lead to a really fun scene whenever, like, you, of course, Snake isn't dead. He washes up on a shore, and all of a sudden, like, the nuke blast goes off. And you just see, like, the, you know, the rushing wind and the glow of the heat near him. I always remember that for some reason. Is that before or after he has to pop his arm back into place? Because that's real hard to watch.
I don't remember. I think it might be after.
I think that's how they introduce you to the healing system. Because I remember they're like, hey, you're going to want to bite down on something. Because this is going to hurt. I was like, oh, no. Yeah, that's real hard to watch. So that is the end of the Virtuous operation. Cut to, I think, another 3 years later. And that is Operation Snake Eater. Which is, you are trying to prove to the Soviets that the U.S. was framed by Volgan. And so as a part of Operation Snake Eater... You will be taking down, you'll be running into all of the members of Cobra, and you will be pretty much taking them on individually. So there's your boss fights throughout the game. We'll get to them in a second. One of the first people you meet when you do Operation Snake Eater is, and this, of course, this is the twist here. So you're supposed to be finding a man named Adam, who was an operative inside the GRU.
Adam and Eva. They're finding them at the same time. They're supposed to show up at the same time.
You're only supposed to find Adam, though.
Oh, really? I thought it was both.
No, so here's what happens. You're supposed to be looking for a man named Adam. Who does show up is a woman named Eva. And... real quick, one of my favorite things about this is they've had to throw the Metal Gear Solid 2 reference in there. They're like, hey, we have a password set up, so whenever Adam shows up, you know it's him. And the call and response they have is, who are the Patriots? And lalelulelo. You basically, I think if I remember correctly, you go back to where you found Sokolov. And that's where you're supposed to meet up with Adam.
Yes, I think that's right.
But instead, you meet up with Eva, and Eva is supposed to do the password, but then, like, fighting happens, and then you're like, well, okay, I guess you're fine then. Yep. So this is the character that gets sexualized the most. And so this is the... In Metal Gear Solid 2, they gave you the option of, like, they never told you when it would happen, but you could hold the right bumper or R1. And you could, like, get first-person view of, like, what Snake or Raiden would see. And it never told you when it happened. You would just kind of try to do it randomly, and then you could see some things. 3 throws all that subtlety to the window because you get the icon in the top right corner to say, hey, there's going to be some stuff to look at. And whenever Eva shows up, Snake is staring directly at her cleavage the entire time she's talking. So it's literally a 2-minute introduction of Eva, and all you're doing is staring at, like, pixel cleavage. Or polygon cleavage, sorry.
Polygon.
It is 3D. And the best part is, like, whenever that scene ends, they cut back to Snake, and he's still just, like, leering. Just like, ugh. It was, oh, God. It was, yeah, it's really hard to watch now, but even back then, it was like, this is ridiculous.
Yep.
Even as a kid, even as a teenager, I knew that was too much. My favorite, honestly, like in terms of like how ridiculous it is, my favorite one of those is whenever you like you end up having to like wait the night just to rest a little bit, and you wake up and a young Revolver Ocelot has shown up with his crew looking for Naked Snake. That's his code name, Naked Snake. And my favorite thing is she's trying to tell you Ocelot's crew is out there and he's surrounded the place, and yet R1 pops up and he's still staring at her cleavage.
Yep.
It's like, focus, man. You're about to die.
Figure it out. Yep.
For love of God, wait a minute. So that is the first time that is where you meet a young Revolver Ocelot, and you get to hear his incredible Ocelot call. Do you remember that?
No.
He makes, at one point, I don't know if it happens he kind of sounds like a cat.
No, I think I need you to like...
Oh, I'll do it.
Yeah, just because I can't.
Yeah, if I remember, the way I remember it in my head is he'll just like he's going to make the call for either the unit to show up or he's like going to disappear. But he just kind of goes, row, row,
row. Yeah. Like, oh, I remembered it.
Does not matter.
Yeah, doesn't he like turn his head too? He goes in a big circle.
The animation looks so bad with it. And that's what makes it stick in my head. One of my all-time favorite moments from this game. Not a positive one, but it's so funny. Yeah, so young Ocelot's there. He doesn't really factor into the overall, like, he always shows up, but it's more of just like, hey, you remember this guy? You remember from the other games you played? Yeah, this is where he came from. Although, there is a pretty big reveal about his story.
The origin story really happens here. It really sets off his arc, for sure.
Okay, so we'll touch back on Ocelot's one big story moment at the end, but he does have one really important one. So the four members, there actually might be five. I think I missed one here, but I don't remember. This is where I need you to help me here.
I'll fill in the blanks.
Okay, good. So the main bosses in the game are the members of Cobra, or the former members of Cobra, I should say. That are hanging around. So the ones that I have listed are the Pain, the Fear, the End, and the Fury. And there was the Sorrow. If I remember correctly, the Sorrow has already died at this point.
He has.
He was a former part of the unit, but the only alive ones are these five, and then of course the boss and Volgan. But Volgan doesn't really count, I guess, in terms of
he's not part of the Cobra unit, but he is a baddie.
So okay, this is where I need you to help me along the way, because I remember some of the specifics on these battles, but I don't remember every one of them. So I can tell you that I remember, is the Fear the one with the bees?
Or
is that the Pain? Okay. Oh, no, wait. Or is that the Pain?
Oh,
I think the Fear, isn't he the double jointed one?
Yes.
Okay. Because I saw a clip of the Fear fight today, and I that jogged my memory. Because I remember he does like a weird thing where he like dislocates his arms to like walk backwards. Oh, that's really unsettling. There's a lot of dislocation of arms in this game. It's really unsettling.
That was a weird one.
So that was the Fear. The Pain is like, he's got a lot of bees.
Yep.
Right? Like, that was his whole thing. Like, his face looks like he's been stung a million times.
Yep.
And he can shoot, he can fire bees at you. Like, bullets.
Yep.
And you have to go into the, because from what I remember this too, he can shoot the bees at you. The bees get lodged in, and they do continual damage until you go into the menu and dig them out.
Yeah. not fun.
If you want to give like specifics,
especially for somebody who is who has a phobia of bees.
Oh, really?
This is not a fun battle. Yeah.
I don't think I knew that.
Oh, well, now you do.
Huh. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I absolutely hate snakes, and that's like the whole thing behind this game.
Yep, true. Very true.
Yeah. So there's the bees. I mean, that's okay. So the pain, bees, the fear, weird double jointed thing. But like, does he just run around? Like, I don't remember the specifics of his battle. Does he just run around weird?
Yeah, I don't remember anything other than that.
Okay.
Like, he's just sort of hard to pin and
right.
shoot.
Okay. That's yeah. what I thought. I feel like his is not the most memorable.
Yeah.
There's the end I remember because he's the old sniper dude.
Yep.
And that was a pretty fun. That's a fun one if you do it the normal way. And it's really interesting. It's like two other ways you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That are real fun. We can talk about that here. So tell me what the normal battle was with the end. It's just like a sniper battle back and forth, right? Is it kind of like
yeah,
the sniper wolf one from one?
So no, because it is in that it's like two snipers going at each other, but
yeah.
the cool mechanic with the end is that he can leave the area and you're essentially just trying to find him and shoot him. So the battle can last. So like, and by the map, I mean like whatever is currently loaded, like whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, area is currently loaded. Cause there's loading times between each of the, you know, mini maps or whatever you want to call it. But
yeah.
So depending on if you can find him or not, the battle can last 30 seconds or it could last like 2 hours. Just, you know, if you can't find him or whatever. So one of the big mechanics is looking around and trying to see a little glint from his scope on his
right.
sniper.
Okay. I do yeah. remember this fight now. Cause I yeah. remember the visual. I remember like having to look for that little, like the little glint off the scope or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was pretty good. So that, yeah, I always remember that. I know I didn't do a good job remembering the actual moment to moment of it, but I do remember really liking the end's boss fight.
Yeah.
And then I found out about the fun Easter egg ways that you can take him out either yep. early on or just at this battle. So the one that I knew about before, and by before I mean before I watched a video probably about 4 hours ago on this, to remind myself, the one I remembered the most was that at the start of this battle, or near the start of this battle, save the game, wait a week, and then load that file again. So when you walk into the area that you're about to start the normal battle, you trigger a cutscene where you walk up behind the end, because the end is very old, very, very old. So you walk yes. up behind him, and Snake is like, you know, like, stand down, stand down. And then you get up there and you bump him a little and he just falls flat out of the wheelchair that he's in. And then you realize that he died of old age. And so then, yep. then you make a call back. You're like, well, guess that one took care of itself. So,
yep,
yeah.
No big deal on that one, I guess.
Yep. And then the second way that you can deal with the end is a way you can do it before you even get into the fight with him in the first place. There's a cutscene earlier on where it's Volgan, the End, and I think the Fury are like walking into this underground base. And if you have managed to find the sniper rifle earlier on, you can take him out then and there. Which then triggers this amazing scene where, because at the end of the normal fight, he just explodes. So anytime he dies, he just explodes. And so if you take him out here, he explodes. And then the wheel from his wheelchair comes spinning back and hits you in the face no matter where no matter where you are. And then, like, so your radio contact is Major Zero, who is originally Major Tom, because Kojima loves his Bowie references. And he's just like, hey, you took out the end there. That was great. You'll have to deal with him later on. And, like, Snake's all disappointed. He's like, Snake, it's not a competition. We're in battle here. Just be happy you dealt with it. He's like, okay.
And that's the end of that.
Yep, that's just how that goes.
So, sorry, I need to come back and rectify.
Okay.
Because I had forgotten. I now remembered the fear. First of all, the pains. The only other thing I think of note in the pain, the other thing about the pain was that you're doing it in like an underground cave. And by doing it, I mean battling each other. You're battling each other in an underground cave. And there's like, he's in like this sort of dais. Like a middle sort of platform. There's mm-hmm. water all around him. So you can escape the bees by diving under the water until they sort of just like disperse. So that was mostly how I dealt with them. The fear is you're in like the jungle and he jumps on the treetops, like on the trees from limb to limb, and you have to shoot him down from the tree. And that's mm-hmm. when he does like his weird backwards walk thing.
Okay.
And you can continue to shoot him.
Yep. That makes sense.
I had learned at one point there's another way to beat him
mm-hmm.
because he has to come down. He comes down to eat and like regain some of his energy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can lay out spoiled food.
Right.
So if you let whatever animals or whatever you've picked up, if you let that spoil in your inventory, you can drop it. And he'll come down to eat it, get poisoned, and he'll slowly lose life.
Right.
So that was like that's a cool way. I didn't do it that way, but that was mm-hmm. one way that I found out later on that you could do that.
Oh, that's, I love like there. It feels like just about every one of these boss battles has like, if not a completely different way to defeat it, at least like a like something that if you really sat down and thought about it, you're like, well, that should be possible, then it usually is. Like being able to poison a guy who's going to eat. That's what I always love about it. And I feel like from 2, they started doing it, and 3, they really upped it quite a bit. And there's a lot of little detail like that in this game.
I think it's cool. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is completely unrelated, and I just had this thought, and I need, if this doesn't exist, please, for the love of God, somebody make this for me, because I need this in my life. I want a clip. Have you ever seen Tommy Boy with Chris Farley, David Spade?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know that scene where they have to fake, whenever I think they're getting pulled over for something, and they just come running out of the car, just yelling, "Bees! Bees! For the love of God!" Can someone please take that clip and just put it over footage of the pain whenever he shows up with the bees? Just give me that audio of Chris Farley. "Bees! Your weapons do nothing against them."
Oh man, that would be so incredible.
Oh, sorry, just I had that thought. I needed to share it.
No, that was that was incredible.
Oh god. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't remember what I was going to say now, but I don't think it was that important.
That's all right. The only other one we haven't covered is the Fury. And does he have a flamethrower?
Yep, he has a flamethrower. He's in like a giant suit.
Yeah.
Like an exoskeleton type of like armor suit. and you're in the base at that point, so you're underground.
Mm-hmm.
Or the lab. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, you're in, you know, this sort of military or scientific space. You're underground, and there are these like long, it's a big room, but it's they're separated by like columns and like
long pieces of concrete. So they sort of make these hallways.
Mm-hmm.
There's like four or five of them. And he'll, there's, you know, pathways on the end. So you can sort of run in between all of the hallways. And so it's kind of a cat and mouse type of game where he can shoot those long, I think he even has rockets or something else too, but he shoots that flamethrower down the hallway. And if you're kind of stuck in there, then you're screwed. But if you can like place mines and like, you know, quickly run to a new hallway, shoot a rocket and like, you know, that kind of stuff. That's basically what I did.
Yep. Okay. That
sort of duck and cover kind of stuff.
That is ringing some bells now. I do remember that. Yeah. Okay. And so is there, other than the final fight of the game, I think so that's it for the Cobra unit.
There's no, So first of all, one of I think the very first boss is Ocelot. You like right. shoot him because he's trying to like prove his worth to you. Essentially.
Yeah, Ocelot shows up here and there. But yeah. I do remember there's an Ocelot fight, and I remember that you can shoot the bees in the tree, the bee nests
yes.
on him,
yep.
knock him down, and that'll help take him out.
Yep, exactly. The other one is the Sorrow. So you do face the Sorrow. He's a boss.
Okay.
He is dead though. And it's,
oh right. Does yeah. he show up as a ghost?
He does.
Throughout
so you,
the game.
He does. Yeah, and it's kinda wild because sometimes in those first person views when
yeah.
you're talking to, I don't know if it's always the boss or if it's like just specific people, he'll like kinda, you know, be a very creepy ghost behind them and like wiggle his way around you.
Okay.
Or behind the person.
There's a storyline reason it would make sense if it's just the boss. But
yes.
The boss would, and yep. possibly Ocelot.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. But anyway.
Yeah. So that's the other Ocelot part that I think what you're hinting at there
right.
is the other like big story point, I think. But anyway.
Yeah. Which we're getting close to that.
Right, so the Sorrows battle is really interesting because it's you're injured. I can't remember if it's after the torture scene or if it's at some other point where Snake is like on the verge of death. But he goes through, he's sort of in limbo. And now I can't remember how you beat the boss because I remember it took me forever to like realize, oh, this is what I needed to do. But you're essentially walking through this river, and anybody you've beaten or anybody
yes.
you've killed
oh
shows
my
up
God.
As a ghost,
right.
and like attacks you.
That was
yeah,
so
this is,
cool.
This is honestly the coolest.
How did I forget
the coolest
about
boss fight?
That?
Yeah, this is the coolest boss fight. So. You're essentially just walking, and then finally you come up to the Sorrow,
mm-hmm.
and if you continue to walk or try to walk past him, you die. You're
mm-hmm.
dead immediately. But if you, and now I can't remember how you do it. I'm gonna have to look it up.
Okay.
But it's something you either die and don't start again. Oh no. It's an item that you have. It might be there's like a cyanide pill that you get.
You do have a fake death. What they call it, the fake death pill. I don't know why.
Yes. and is that how you beat it? I'm looking it up real
okay.
quick.
Okay. Well,
I can't remember.
Well, you do that. I'll briefly touch on another scene. So the scene after all of the, after you get through all of the main former Cobra units, you will be captured by Volgan at some point. I don't remember exactly how it happens, but I think it's whenever there's so you get captured by Volgan. That's when you start learning more. This is one of those story beat times. So you learn that Volgan wants to mass produce those Shagohod nuclear tanks. Not a big surprise. Volgan tortures Snake, and in the process of this torturing to try to get details about the U.S., there's like a scene where, you know, Eva's there because Eva's been a spy inside the GRU. and Ocelot is starting to like pick up on that something might be wrong here with Eva. And so Ocelot is like trying to mess with her a bit and doing like a Russian roulette thing with like three different pistols where he keeps like juggling them and like, you know, firing at her to try to get her to, you know, to admit that she's a spy. And then right when he's about to fire the one that would have actually shot her, Snake like pushes like from his like shackles, he pushes his way in and he ends up taking that bullet right in the eye. And that's how Boss, Big Boss, has his eye patch. That's how he loses his eye, because he was protecting Eva from Ocelot doing the thing. And yeah, it's gruesome, because I think then from when anytime you do a first person scene, you only ever get the one eye.
Yeah, I can't remember if that is the case or not, but yeah, the scene itself is pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it really, yeah, that's a rough moment. That's when you learn about the Philosopher's Legacy, which is apparently just a slush fund that was used by the U.S., the Soviets, excuse me, U.S., Russia, and China during World War II, and that all was stolen by Colonel Volgin's father. And I believe, well, no, that so that reveal comes later. God, there's so many loose threads. There's so many threads here that I'm building up to. So you eventually, I don't remember the exact circumstances here about how that torture ends, but you do escape, I think with the help of Eva. I think Eva, that's what it was. I think Eva helps you escape. But anyway, all of this is building to the actual final boss fight in the game. And I say boss either, fight. Sorry.
It's either Eva or the boss who saves you.
Yeah, if it is the boss.
It's Eva.
That's what I thought. Eva helps, but there's... Okay, so we're gonna get to that. It's all connected.
Yep.
So, final boss fight is literally you taking on the boss. And I think before I get to that specific, I need to touch on the one thing that I've been meaning to talk about the whole time, and that's the theme song, which is the greatest theme song in this entire series, because it is
absolutely wonderful.
It is a jazzy Bond theme. It is fantastic. Snake Eater. It wasn't my best one, but. Oh, it's so...
It was beautiful.
It is so good. And the best part is, if you have Spotify, it is on Spotify. So I highly recommend you go listen to that song. It was sung by a woman named Cynthia Harrell, who actually recently, a writer at Kotaku, managed to track her down and kind of just interview her and just try to figure out... Basically, try to figure out how like a young black woman in this industry like managed to record this amazing song for a Japanese video game company in the mid 2000s, where it doesn't seem like how did that manage to line up in a weird way. And it's true. It's a really interesting read. I recommend checking it out. But it is so good, and they use that song so many times in the game. And every time they use it, such great effect. Like, obviously, in the intro, in between the two missions, so when, before you start Operation Snake Eater, you get the full, like, full-on Bond theme with the video and everything. And, I still get chills when I watch it. I just watched it again, and I could feel the goosebumps happening. And then there's, like, a scene in the middle of the game where all you do is walk up this incredibly tall ladder. It takes like almost two or three full minutes.
Yeah, but it's long.
As you go up the ladder, the song starts to kick in again. And like what would be a really dumb and like just incredibly dull scene just comes alive as you're walking up. Like it's this little cinematic moment where the song kicks in as you're rising up. You're like, oh, it's so good. And then it happens again here in the fight with the boss. About halfway through, you have 10 minutes, I think, as a time battle against the boss. And about halfway through, the song starts picking up again. And I think, as if I remember correctly, like layers in. It starts with the vocals, and then everything else starts backing up until you have the full track playing as you're taking on the boss. Oh, it was one of those times where that it was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, Kojima, you got me. This is why this is why I put up with all the other shit, is to get to this stuff. This is cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and that whole scene with the boss at the end too, like the scene is like the fight is in this giant field of like white flowers, and it's just so like well put together, like the visuals of it,
picturesque.
Yeah, and I can't remember the specifics of that battle other than she's really tough.
Yep.
Like really hard to get. Like she's very quick on the CQC is nearly impossible with her, if I remember correctly, because she'll just reverse it.
It's a lot of getting a little bit far enough away so you can shoot at her.
Yep.
Essentially.
Okay.
And I think I want to say that, like, yeah, that's basically the big thing. One other thing I wanted to say about the ladder scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the butterflies that come in or whatever too, that are like floating around as you're climbing up the ladder. It's sort of just this bizarre, like, rising from the ashes, like you thought he was dead, all this kind of stuff. But the other thing, too, I saw recently that they had remade it in Unreal Engine, one of the Unreal Engines.
Oh, what?
It's like, beautiful now.
I need to see that.
It's just, like, a four-minute scene. Definitely worth taking a look at.
If I find that, I'm going to link that in the show notes. I need to see that. Sure. It's amazing.
I guess there are some other things that happen before the boss battle, the battle with the boss.
Okay.
Like story-wise. So that's when the boss sort of reveals what she was, or no, sorry. That it wasn't until the end that she reveals like what was happening, but
yeah.
She does she like sort of reveals her ties with Eva and like their sort of camaraderie, and it's there, it's either hinted at or they come right out and say that Ocelot is the progeny of the boss and the Sorrow.
Yep.
So yep. That's which is like wild to me.
Yeah,
maybe not wild. I don't know, it's interesting. Because then at the end of the day, I think because of like the closeness between the boss and Naked Snake, Ocelot really respects Naked Snake. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of sets his trajectory for the rest of the series, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Which I think was a cool way to sort of incorporate all of that.
Yeah.
Again, just making this so much more of a straightforward, like streamlined story just helped with all that, I think, too. But
yeah, not having 20 layers of, well, this group is this group and this plan was really this plan, but no, it was really this plan.
Yeah, and actually it was a simulation the whole time or whatever. So yeah, but no, I think it's definitely interesting that you know, that they set up, you know, the rest of the story arc like very well in 3. Yeah. And it, you know, the actual mission itself, which, you know, I guess is sort of similar in all the others too, the actual mission and like that boss for that, you know, for the what you see is the actual mission is not really like the main point. So like Volgan and the Shagohod and all of that stuff sort of
right, you play do second face fiddle off
to the actual.
I forgot you do. Yeah. You do have the Shagohod battle
where you're like on a motorcycle with Eva and
that's when you're blowing escaping up
the Shagohod. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And the Shagohod's like trying to run you down, essentially.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild, but like it pales in comparison for like the tension created by, you know, your relationship with the boss and all of that stuff, and culminating in that final battle.
The Shaco Hod's like big and over the top and ridiculous, whereas like the boss one feels like it there's a lot of weight there.
Yeah, I agree.
Emotional weight.
You've got that sort of ludicrous scale, you know, type stuff with all the Metal Gears, right? Like they're all just these gigantic beings, and that's not, you know, that being sort of the precursor to all of the rest of the Metal Gears is, you know, you can see the similarity there. Yeah. Also, it has those two drills in the front, and I don't really know what they're for.
Yeah,
I
guess like the weird.
They drill into the ground. I guess they drill into the ground to like hold it there while it shoots the nuke. But
oh,
I don't know.
Yeah, that would
we also have the technology where you can just shoot the nuke from your hand, I guess. So
yeah,
is that necessary?
They have multiple ways to deploy a nuke.
Apparently so.
Yeah. All right, let's hit some last bullet points on the story before we can kind of look at the whole thing as a whole. All good. So real quick, the boss is yet another Kojima character that is pleading for death. She asks you to kill her, I think like two or three times, or at least like finish your mission and me out. It's just, that's another trope that we've seen in at least all of these games so far, is that at least one character is like, please kill me, I can't die, to some effect. Yeah. Once you do manage to take down the boss, that's when you find out that this whole mission was planned because the boss was really a double agent working the whole time with the U.S. She had to infiltrate the Cobra unit. The one thing that the U.S. never anticipated, though, was that Volgan was going to set off the nuke and try to frame the U.S. So when that happened, they had to change their plan. And the only way that they could make the U.S. look innocent in this is that they had to make the boss take the fall. So she would defect to Russia, and they would send out her protege, you know, Snake, to kill her, to prove that that she had truly defected to the Soviets, and that the U.S. was just there to finish off the person that, you know, tried to frame them for the whole thing. So her taking the fall was the plan the whole time, and she knew it.
Yep.
Which right there, just that really hits you in the gut after you get through that fight.
Yeah, for sure.
And Snake, as a result from this battle, when he comes back home, he is rewarded with the title of Big Boss, and he's given all these medals, but he's right there, he's already incredibly conflicted, because not only was this the person that taught him everything he knew, it was the person he loved, and he knew that the U.S. made her take the fall, you know, like the CIA made her take the fall, and he just grew incredibly disenfranchised with Fox and the whole system as a result, which, you know, as all these games are, they tend to be an anti-war message, you know, or a message about how, you know, war is, I want to say war is hell, but it's kind of all variations of themes on, like, they're all, you know, they all have some kind of anti-war message, and that was the big one in this one. You learned that Eva wasn't necessarily a spy for the U.S. She was a spy for China. And she was there the whole time to retrieve the Philosopher's Legacy, which was that slush fund. And so for some reason, even though it's a slush fund, it's like this weird little like film strip thing or canister.
Yeah, it's microfilm. Yeah.
Yeah. She thought she got the right one. However, post-credit sequence, and we get to talk to Ocelot, where Ocelot reveals that not only is the Philosopher's Legacy that Eva has a fake, he has the real one, and that Ocelot was not just a double agent, because first you hear him talk to the Soviets, but then he's talking to the U.S., so he was a triple agent the whole time.
Oh, man.
He was also Adam. So he was the one you were supposed to run into. And then there's a teaser that...
And technically you do that scene.
Yep. He just didn't know it. And then they tease that, like, hey, we have this design for this like robotic lizard thing. Do you want to use it? No, we're going to say it like that, but they're teasing Metal Gear.
That's essentially, yeah.
Hey, you guys want to build this giant mechanical lizard that could deploy nukes? I mean, I guess. We got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
That's like high level plot of Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yep.
So
can we also quick aside here?
Mm-hmm.
The philosopher's legacy.
Uh-huh.
It is the slush run, right?
Yes.
It's $1 billion. Which that's like it. That's a lot of money.
It is.
But at the same time, you think for this like grand shadow conspiracy or this grand shadow group,
uh-huh.
You know, whatever, you would expect it to be a lot larger.
Right. Like it shouldn't be something.
Like I'm thinking at least $1 trillion.
Right. It shouldn't be dwarfed by like some of like it should. Jeff Bezos shouldn't be able to beat it.
Jeff Bezos like should be 681 philosopher legacies. Right.
It should not be a drop in the bucket for like an Elon Musk or a Bezos. You know, that's a good point. I don't think I realized it was just $1 billion. What a weird like. Why wouldn't you make it? It's three countries.
Yeah,
I didn't know it's like $1 billion.
I hope that their GDP is like a lot more than all three of them.
I hope inflation really went up on that because even in the 70s or 60s, whenever this was happening, that seems like it should be more. I mean, really, one other thing I just want to note because it's one of my favorite ridiculous additions to any game, and it comes with the base Snake Eater game, but it's also included in, I think it's included in HD Remake Subsistence 1. They added a game mode called Snake versus Monkey. And if you have not played this, it is just Ape Escape.
But it is a rescue mission.
Rescuing who?
Apes. What? Monkeys. But not just any monkeys.
You said monkeys?
Just listen. Your mission is to infiltrate the jungle and capture all of the monkeys.
Again? You said monkeys?
Yes, monkeys.
This isn't really my thing. If you want your monkeys, you better ask Spike or Jimmy.
They've made a deal with the, I don't know, with the developers of Ape Escape or whatever, but they basically just, like, what if we took the monkeys from Ape Escape? And we put them in some of the levels from the game. And then we give Snake, like, more or less a Nerf dart gun. And you would use that to then, like, knock out the monkeys. And you just run. Instead of, like, hitting them with the net like you do in Ape Escape, you just run up and grab them. But, like, they have full recordings with a young Roy Campbell instead of Major Zero. And he's the one telling you that the monkeys have landed. It's so funny. It's so ridiculous. I can't recommend. And it's like really fun to play. Like it's a really weird version of Ape Escape. And they got to say like David Hayter to do his Snake voice saying like, got him. Yeah. Gotcha. You really need to check it out if you have the game. You need to try it out. But yeah, I think we can kind of wrap up the talk there. I mean, like I said, there's so much minutia in these games, but you kind of have to experience it for yourself. You know, like I don't want it to spoil a lot of it. And also, as we learned from Metal Gear Solid 2, you can go off on a million tangents on any one portion of this, but.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I think for everyone's sake, we should try to keep it as high level as possible for this discussion. Yeah. But
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'll send it to you first. You know, final thoughts, impressions, anything else about Metal Gear Solid 3 : Snake Eater?
Snake Eater.
Where's that version of the theme?
Well, I don't know, but we need it.
Yep.
We need a bluegrass.
We do.
Oh man. Yeah, so my final thoughts. You know, now you've taken me on a quest or on an epic saga. Mm-hmm. Someday they will write a tome of our dealings here.
Yep.
But that tome will just be Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
No, that's a lie. But you know, having seen you play one, played 2, 3, Peace Walker now, having sort of seen, you know, generally the craziness, having been frustrated by controls in the past, being confused by storylines, all of that stuff, I genuinely think of the ones that I've played so far, 3 has been the best. And just, you know, going back, even just like recollecting, hearing you say those parts of the story and, you know, remembering parts from it, there was a lot to this game that I thought was really, really, really cool. And yeah, I certainly liked it a lot. We'll see if any of the others that we have left will live up to it. No. I have a feeling they won't, but at least in terms of like the whole package. But I think you said it well when you said this is like the, you know, this is the synthesis of mm-hmm. all of that and all of the great parts of the series.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I'll say it again. If it's not my favorite one in the series, it's certainly like it's up there. There's two games so far for me that I would consider the best ones. Keep in mind, I have not played 4. But for me, it's like 3 and 5, like kind of battle it out. But 3 wins just for overall package. You know, it's like the story is just the right amount of like ridiculous to like actual meaningful story. And then like the gameplay is top notch, especially with the 3D camera and I like all the extra systems. It's one of my favorites. I love going back and playing it. I honestly, if I can find a better way to do it than stream it on PlayStation Now, I probably will play it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of it. I don't know what I already know about 1. We'll talk. We have 1 on the calendar. We will definitely be talking 1 soon. But as far as like, I know what 5 has to offer. I don't know about 4. 4 is the wild card, and I'm getting through that. So 4 could throw this whole thing off, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with that, because I think we'll have a good, I'm hoping that we do another Twitch stream version of that one, just because I don't have the means to play it really. That would be a lot of fun. One other thing that I will say about the 3 story is that I agree with you in that, you know, first of all, the boss is not sexualized, which is a very big positive.
It's a big
but boss. I would say too that like in all of the games, again, in all of the games that I've played, that is the most human connection
mm-hmm.
between those two.
Yeah.
And they did a really, really good job of writing that. You know, the boss and Snake's, you know, their trajectory, all of that stuff. And, you know, when I played Peace Walker afterward, a lot of that is still like lingering, this whole, you know, what Snake did to the boss in killing the boss and, you know, him trying to live with that and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that really sets the tone for like the rest of his arc. They did a, you know, because of all of that, because of sort of the gravity of that connection, I'm really happy that they did such a good job of it.
Yep, absolutely agree. It's the most well-written human story I think they tell in the series.
The least absurd.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of who's the focal point, I think they nail it. Like, the boss, I think, is all-time great Metal Gear character, and they do a good job of establishing boss and why he would leave, why we want to leave and eventually do all the events that cause all of the later Metal Gear games. Like, right, it starts out with real heartbreak. That's what I love about this game. Like, it does such a good job of setting up all the future stuff that's already happened and what will happen. So,
right.
Very good.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that is Metal Gear Solid 3. Do yourself a favor. Like, if you're going to start with, and it makes sense to start with this one, even if you don't know the other games, because it's canonically the first one.
Yep.
So you can jump into 3. And even though you may not know some of the people they're referencing, to be like, hey, look at this. Hey, look at Ocelot.
He's back.
Ocelot's making the kitty noise.
Yeah.
You'll be able to, like, get a better understanding. But, so do yourself a favor, get it. You can still play it on Xbox now. If you have a Series X, it's backwards compatible. Paul can attest, I believe, that it works.
Yeah.
If you're on PlayStation, you can get it. You can stream it on PlayStation Now, and it's fine. PlayStation Now is getting an update, so maybe by the time this recording's out, it will already be streaming in a higher resolution, so that might help boost it up a bit. You can get a PS2 copy. They're not hard to find. If you have the means to play PS2 games, I recommend it. But, yeah, that brings us to a close on Metal Gear Solid 3, and luckily for all the Metal Gear fans, I can already assure you we have another one coming up, because we already played Metal Gear Solid 1, like we've talked about many times, so you can bet that episode will be coming soon. We haven't made any specific notes about next month's recording. I don't want to tease some things we can't do, but I will point out that Metal Gear Solid's right there. There's a very good chance that Metal Gear Solid could be the one we talk about next. There's also, and I believe you told me you were playing this, Paul, and it's a series that I really want to talk about at some point. You were playing the original Resident Evil, weren't you? Like the remake?
I have it, but I haven't played it.
You haven't played it?
I have I think it's like the HD version of Resident Evil. Yeah.
It was
it's not the remake that came out like a couple years ago.
It's it's the one, it's on Xbox One, right?
Yeah, well, it's on the Game Pass. Like, it's not a...
Okay.
It's the HD remake that doesn't, like, gets rid of, like, the tank controls, but it still, like, looks like the old...
Yeah, so it's...
It looks like the classic.
If I remember correctly, that is the GameCube remake of the original. But then they re-released it for, like, PS4 and Xbox One, and then... So it still has the updated controls, but now it went from, like... Here's a remake, and now it's an HD. So it's like a double remake. Yeah.
Right.
So kind of thinking we might do that one. And then another one that I had listed, and this is a teaser for just the future in general. And this is also another series. This is another series that I feel like we could talk about quite a bit. Is the Halo Reach, and start from there.
Oh, all right.
I will be the first to admit, I have not played all of the Halos. I've only ever finished Reach, the story of Reach, and liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
That would be one where I feel like you will be holding my hand along the way. But it could get interesting, because the story of Halo is not Metal Gear wild.
It's bonkers.
But when you get into the details of it, it is absolutely bonkers. So
just replace shadowy conspiracy governments with religious zealots, and you got a little bit of a...
Well, there you go. We got plenty to look forward to in the months to come. Yeah. So join us back here next month. We will tease what that episode is once we know what we've recorded. We're gonna play a little fast and loose for now until we figure out a schedule again. But it's good to be back, and hopefully, you know, barring the pandemic causing any other issues, hopefully we'll be able to return on a somewhat normal basis. But thank you for listening. Paul, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Yes. Well, I mean, having slash, you know, thank you for co-hosting.
Someday I hope to get a coffee mug that says world's greatest co-host.
Amazing. Oh, I want one now too. On that note, I think we're going to call it there. So thank you for listening, and we will be back very soon. Bye, everybody.
We will see you. Bye-bye.